You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Now it's time to hear from the Green Party's Ricardo Menendez March.
The government recently announced a number of amendments to the Employment Relations Act, which would clarify whether a worker was legally considered to be an employee or a contractor. The amendments included a test with four added criteria, such as a written agreement with the worker specifying that they were an independent contractor and that the business did not restrict the worker from working for other businesses and required them to take on additional tasks and engagements, among other criteria. If a worker met all the criteria specified in the Act, they would be considered as a contractor and would not be able to challenge their employment status through the courts. While Workplace Relations and Safety Minister Brooke Van Velden said that the changes would provide greater certainty for employers and businesses, union members and labor rights advocates have criticized the move, saying that it would allow companies to strip away the rights of workers to boost profit margins. For our weekly catch-up, I spoke to the Green Party's Ricardo Menendez March to discuss the recent changes to the Employment Relations Act and the party's take on it. We also had a korero about the Waitangi Tribunal's findings into the recent changes to the Marine and Coastal Areas Act, as well as the recently released draft list of 35 minerals considered essential to New Zealand's economy. What impacts do you think that the recent changes to the Employment Relations Act will have on the rights of workers, whether they are contractors or employees?
Well, what it will do is it will put workers who should be employees potentially in a situation where they will be locked in the contractor status. We've seen how that has played out in the case of Uber drivers, but there are other workers in the health system who could be affected in such ways as well. And we've got to remember that at the end of the day, when you're locked in as a contractor and you should be an employee, you miss out on, you know, some basic legal entitlements like annual leave, sick leave, etc., that your employer should be paying. And so this will diminish the material conditions for workers and will leave people poorer as well.
Why is it important for contract workers to have the same rights as employees and to have the ability to challenge their employment status through the courts?
Yeah, like, well, not every contractor will want the same conditions as employees. Many are fighting for those and they deserve to get them. And like I said, a lot of it is to do with things like getting basic entitlements like sick leave, annual leave, and just those material protections that you can get. I mean, look, I know Uber is like one of those more high-profile cases, but many of us use Uber on a regular basis. We benefit from the work that those Uber drivers do, and yet many will not know that the conditions that Uber drivers face are horrendous, and they basically have very little protections against Uber as a company should they try to dismiss them, punish them, for example. And this is why those people should be able to challenge their employment status in the court.
Do you think that the amendments could also lead to some employees being miscategorized as contractors and losing some of their guaranteed rights and protections?
Well, we know that some people who should be defined as employees could end up being locked in as contractors, lose a lot of those entitlements. And we know that this is a government that actually wants to, at least for example in the public sector, push more people into that contracting status because it's easier to keep people in that precarious status, it's easier to pay them less, and that will lead to a low-wage economy, to people earning less overall and have worse working conditions, leading us to being a poorer country.
Do you think that greater clarity regarding whether or not a worker was considered an employee or contractor was even needed in the first place?
No, what we needed is actually to empower workers to be able to challenge that status throughout the court system. And we need to actually, you know, the government does need to lead the way, at least in the public sector, to stop relying so much on contractors. A lot of the over-reliance on contractors is a political choice by the government and the public sector. And so, yeah, I don't think this was needed, and we should have actually just empowered workers to actually have those same entitlements and to be able to collectively bargain as workers.
All right, moving on to the next topic. Last week, the Waitangi Tribunal released its findings into the government's changes to the Marine and Coastal Area Act, which would reintroduce a John Key era requirement for those seeking the customary marine title, which recognizes iwi, hapu, and whanau connection to part of the marine and coastal area, To prove that they've had continuous exclusive use and ownership of the area since 1840, the tribunal found that the government had failed to consult with Māori and that the changes to the act violated Te Tiriti principles guaranteeing Māori rights to their customary waters. What's the Green Party's take on the findings by the Waitangi Tribunal?
Oh, well, look, we've backed the findings of the Waitangi Tribunal and we've made it clear that this is an affront to Māori sovereignty, it's an affront to Te Tiriti. As a migrant to Aotearoa, I'm here by virtue of Te Tiriti or Waitangi, and I think it's horrendous to also be ceding ground for corporates to be able to extract resources from our marine environment when actually, if we look at our historical legal founding documents, you'll be able to see that Māori never ceded sovereignty over those areas, and the government shouldn't just be able to trample over that document and distribute those resources to the highest bidder.
What impacts do you think the changes to the Act will have on the rights of Māori and iwi to their waters and coastline?
Well, it will disconnect Māori from their coastline. It will also allow corporates to basically be fed by the hand of the government at the expense of our marine biodiversity and well-being. And ultimately, it will trample over our founding document, creating division and dispossession. Again, like, this is one of the biggest affronts to Māori sovereignty since foreshore and seabed, and the government should walk these changes back and stop peddling misinformation in relationship to Māori sovereignty.
What do you have to say about Paul Goldsmith's claim that the changes to the Act were needed to protect the interests of all New Zealanders in marine and coastal areas?
Well, a lot of this has been peddled with misinformation around this idea that people won't be able to access public areas. This is not what this bill is about. This bill, it continues to be about stripping Māori of their sovereignty that was supposed to be protected under Te Tiriti or Waitangi. And it's completely in line with everything else that the government is doing, which is to want to try and rewrite history and to claim that Māori ceded sovereignty when they never did.
Lastly, should the government dismiss the findings and recommendations of the tribunal and go ahead with the amendments, what impact do you think this will have for Māori Crown relations?
Well, we're already seeing Māori Crown relations hit rock bottom. Ultimately, what the government will be doing is rewriting history. It will sow the seeds for discontent and for uprising, and which you know people will have end up having a right to do when such funding document is disrespected in this way. But we've got to remember that at the end of the day, it will have severe negative impacts on Māori by nature of disconnecting them to their whenua, and that is that actually has other material impacts when it comes to things like poverty, when it comes to things like mental well-being and your connection to your culture.
All right, moving on to the last topic. On Sunday earlier this week, the government published a list of 35 minerals it considered essential for New Zealand's economy. The list included resources and minerals considered useful for national security or that were at risk of supply chain disruption and would be included as one of the deliverables for the government's draft mineral strategy. Do you think that the release of the draft list of critical resources could have an impact on Aotearoa's landscapes and conservation?
I mean, we're already seeing the impact the government's policies will have on our natural environment by nature of the fast-track bill, which will allow for things like coal mining projects in our backyard and conservation land, leaving many species at risk of extinction for short-term economic gains. There's a few problems here with the government's list. One of them is that it claims that it's for reasons of national security, yet we're mining for things like coal, which I would argue are not essential. And then when it comes to issues like gold, for example, gold is actually an abundant resource that just happens to be used for things that are not particularly useful most of the time. So there are other ways in which we could better use the minerals that we have around the world in a way that is far more efficient and for things that are actually, you know, for national security purposes or critical economic purposes rather than things like jewelry. And so I think this is just another sort of glossy announcement that just paves the way for the destruction of our natural environment for not much economic gains in the long term.
One of the resources that has been included in the list are rare earth elements, which are used to manufacture wind turbines and electric cars. Do you think that there could be some long-term positive environmental impacts in utilizing some of the resources in the list?
Not when the companies extracting those resources are doing it for profit rather than putting people and planet at the forefront. And we have seen how the extraction of rare minerals by greedy corporates in places like Africa and Latin America has led to the dispossession of local communities. And so we know that the government is allowing companies that put profit before people on the planet to be the ones extracting those resources, which means that local communities won't be the ones benefiting the most from the extraction of those rare minerals.
Lastly, do you think that digging up Aotearoa's natural resources is a viable way to stimulate our economy?
Well, when we know that the government has plans to allow offshore corporates to extract resources for short-term economic gains to take those profits overseas, we know that it's not going to benefit our local economy. And we know that they're extracting resources that have no place in a economy that takes climate change seriously. The government should be investing in things like renewable sources of energy rather than digging out coal, for example.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95bfm.com/bcasts.